the episode?
No.
I did.
No.
Because I knew, well, actually, I did know that I was going to have to wait 2 weeks to see the next episode.
Oh.
I didn't know that either. They totally snuck that one
up. Way to drop the bomb right on everybody. It's Monday morning if you're listening in the morning. And sorry to bring you this news to hurt the rest of your week, just in case you didn't stay after the credits.
Yeah.
You know who else is still sleeping right now as it's Monday morning, as I'm watching TV? The Hound. And he's about to get woken up.
Oh, God.
That was pretty sweet.
That's pretty badass. I just have to wonder, though, would she have been able to do it?
It wasn't a very big rock.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, you know, she's got gravity helping her out,
it's
too.
It's the thought that counts, though.
I think that I was probably confident in the rock's murdering capabilities until I saw how small she was in comparison when she was riding the horse.
Yeah, it's so true.
And that might have been one of the cutest scenes I think I've ever seen on the show.
Cutest?
Yeah, it was adorable. They're riding together on the horse, and then they cut to the wide shot. They're riding away like
a
Western.
She's all happy.
Yeah.
It was a happy moment. She was going to see her mom. That was good.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Mm-hmm.
It was. No, I'm glad that we broke that wall, because I was afraid the Hound was never going to mention, oh, hey, I'm a good guy now. So,
yeah.
But he did.
Yeah, I just love that one moment where he says, fuck the queen.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Fuck Joffrey.
That was a nice call.
Yeah, that was good.
That was a great callback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great job. I'm glad that these guys are writing the next two episodes, because, you know, tradition speaking, now I guess we can say that because we're in three seasons now. 8 and 9 are generally the more exciting ones when things happen.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't expect to see Sansa get married. We were literally talking today, earlier, Micah and Selena and I were talking, like, I was like, I'm sure she's not going to get married until the end of next season. And here it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They went
big. We were all like,
You knew?
Yeah, of course we knew.
You see, I thought we were all just confused because of the translation from the books to the screen. I was just like, yeah, we're all in the same boat here. And then little do I know, they're like IMing to each other like that he's in for it tonight.
Joffrey was just terrible. He's just, I mean, I guess that's nothing new. He's reached higher levels of terrible than this, but it was just chilling, his behavior. The whole thing. And well done, drunk Tyrion.
Yes.
That was great. I love the way he like spit. Like he was, yes. Peter Dinklage was just amazing tonight. Oh, he really was.
It was a pretty incredible performance. Do you think that he got drunk for this performance? I mean, obviously he didn't, but I mean, it'd be more fun if he did. They were like, here, drink this wine. It's really not a prop this time.
Oh, God. And that was, I mean, that's a subtle thing, because you can imagine how that feels to have to pretend that you married this character that's 14 years old. How creepy that feels.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I mean, I just was sitting there just feeling like, oh, God, this feels so uncomfortable. Like, how are they, you know.
And Tyrion is probably one of the only men in Westeros who would feel uncomfortable by that.
Yeah.
Because he's actually got, Loras, true. Fair point. But because he's actually got some decency.
I expected when he shut the door, when they got into their bed chamber, I assumed at that point he was gonna like, all right, Sansa, like, I'm pretending, like, he just snaps to attention and starts acting normal, and then they have some grand escape. But it never happened. But that would have been pretty cool.
Yeah
I
wonder, though, because I mean, again, you know, deviations from books, we have to talk about them because they are interesting to us. And obviously this scene happened somewhat differently in the book than it did in the show. I suppose that makes sense, because it would be very uncomfortable for us to watch them try to take that any further than they did, maybe, but considering the big age difference between the actors.
Yeah.
But I think in the context of the show, I wonder when Tyrion decided, you know, had that wonderful speech about, you know, not actually taking her to bed until she wanted him to. I wonder if he did that more for Sansa or more for Shay. Because later when Shay comes in, they share that look. It sort of makes me wonder why he didn't. What his reasoning was. What do you guys think?
Well, both. I mean, he did seem to, in the moment, he just seemed to genuinely feel like, ugh, like, I just can't do this to her. But then later, he did seem to feel like, I made the right decision and things are good with Shay, too. So it did feel like it was the right decision for both.
She did check those sheets pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's like, all right, good. We're fine. And that means that Joffrey didn't pay his creepy late night visit either.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
No, he didn't.
Okay. So, yeah.
He talks a lot of crap. I mean, Joffrey says all that stuff, but we've never actually seen him go to have sex with someone, which I
think he was just totally emasculated by Tyrion's little speech.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't expect that to happen because Joffrey has pretty much had his pick of any person always, including Sansa. So the fact that he reserved it for tonight just proves even more how screwed up in his head he actually is. Because, oh, wait, you know, she's getting married to someone else. Now I'll give her some attention instead of not welcome attention. I'm going to, you know, try to, I guess, usurp the seed or something like that. It's it's messed up. A lot of it's very strange.
I think that's part of the reason, Joffrey, though, as to why Tyrion acts the way he does is because he sees how Joffrey has treated her. You know, he understands. He gets it. He knows that he's not the the pick of the litter here for Sansa. And he feels that doing anything to her at this point would just be putting more on top of what Joffrey has already done to her.
It's a brilliant thing about Tyrion is that he actually takes a moment, sits back, and thinks, I wonder how Sansa feels about all of this.
Right.
And he's pretty much the only one in the entirety of King's Landing who does that. So really, I mean, considering that she was going to marry someone, I think he's pretty much the best bet for her.
Well, do you guys think that, I mean, I know a lot of people have been complaining lately, they feel like Tyrion's kind of being whitewashed by the show. I mean, do you think that's the case here as well? Because, I mean, I understand, I'm actually relieved they didn't go as far as the book with as far as him actually taking his clothes off. I'm like, woohoo, like, that's a great thing. But, you know, but of course there is a degree, I mean, not because of Peter Dinklage. I mean, I did not want to have to deal with seeing Sophie Turner.
Right.
She's Sansa.
She's underage. Like, I did not want to go there. But I'm not comfortable with that. But I mean, do we think so? He seems like more of a gentleman. I mean, he did have some sexual desire in the book, so we are now seeing less of that in the show. And in the wedding in the book, he did kind of get a little bit impatient. He was kind of tugging on her to get her to kneel. So we saw less of that in the show. So he does seem a little more gentlemanly in the show. So, I mean, do you think there's a little bit of whitewashing in the sense of here? He is coming off, I think, a little bit better on the show than in the book.
Yeah, but I think in some ways, like, I think that has a lot to do. I mean, obviously, yeah, I do see what people are saying. But to me, that just makes total sense because we don't get his internal monologue. Like, characters in TV shows can't be as layered as they are in books because we don't see all the layers. I mean, it's as simple as that. So I think in terms of making sure that the audience understands that Tyrion is a good guy, they have to make that a little bit more apparent by his actions as opposed to him acting a certain way and then being shown, you know, waxing lyrical in his head for the next 20 pages about it. So I think it makes total sense translation-wise.
I'm really glad that they reminded us that she was 14 because I think that might have gotten lost in translation over the past couple seasons of her actual age. And the fact that, you know, we got kind of a verbal recount of that, I think that was good. Because, I mean, I was kind of unsure where they were placing her. So the fact that they actually vocalized it and made it part of show canon, I was pretty pleased with that.
Don't think it helps that Sophie Turner is extremely tall, even for her age. I think she's only, 17? But she's like 5'10 or 11. She's very tall.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Like, they've said before in the show, like, when she was 13 or whatever, and she looked very young in season one. But in this scene, like, when she said 14, I was like, she's what?
Well, Joffrey noticed how tall she was, so he took away the little footstool like an ass.
Oh, that was so mean. So terrible.
Like, you dick.
Just like, what are you doing with that? You're just going to set it over there? I figured, like, Tywin would at least give him a swat. Like, come on, man.
I did love, speaking of Tywin, though, I did love in that scene where Tyrion was telling off Joffrey, like, Tywin just totally took control of that situation.
Luckily, he had
everything under control, and he didn't, I mean, he couldn't really, I suppose, but Joffrey would have had Tyrion, like, beheaded at that moment or something, you know, like, whipped and like, lick my boots kind of mind frame. So I think that Tywin did really well with that, and he's also just really good at keeping the peace, and I couldn't help but cheer a little bit, because obviously I'm on Team Tyrion, so.
I think Tywin enjoyed a little bit of that, if I'm being honest.
I think he might have, because that's the thing, Tywin hates Tyrion and he hates Joffrey, but I'd probably say he hates Joffrey more.
Yeah, because Tyrion's his kid, first off, you know, not second generation, right? Maybe that has something to do with it. Or maybe the fact he was just getting really embarrassed by the whole thing, don't you think? Because there's a lot of other people there.
Well, first of all, that. But I think it is also, if Tywin believes that Joffrey really is the son of Cersei and Jaime, then he's seeing Joffrey as much of an abomination as Tyrion.
Right.
And Joffrey is clearly the more rotten seed. So I think, yeah, I think that Tywin knows what he's doing in that sense, and he'd rather emasculate Joffrey than Tyrion, because it also serves his need better.
You know who really really enjoyed that scene was the Queen of Thorns.
Oh, yeah.
She's just sitting back eating popcorn the whole time.
Oh, yes.
Oh, she
that was fabulous.
Yeah, her whole genealogy figuring out scene was awesome.
Oh my God, when we were watching that scene, I was like, is this Once Upon a Time? Like, what's happening right now?
It was really, the whole, that entire scene, I loved it. It felt so foreign. A lot of the stuff, like I said, the cowboyish kind of shot from the beginning from a Western, and a lot of this fanfare when it came around the wedding, again, that I didn't see coming. I didn't know this was the day, but it felt really different than what I'm used to seeing in Thrones, but it worked. Like it just made sense to me. So I like that they're having more weddings. Bring them on. It's interesting. It's fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like the snow and stuff, but you know, get our favorite characters in a room together drinking wine. Something's bound to happen, you know?
Oh yeah. Party time.
It's been a while though. If you think about it, you know, we're doing the commentary right now for season one, and you go back to some of the scenes that were in that early part of the series, you don't see those people interacting like you were just saying, Zach, very often, yeah. Where you have all of them collectively in one space and you can get good dialogue between them.
I know.
I
it's
do
really
like it.
Sad. Just talking about that wedding, and can we just talk about the most brilliant sass by Cersei?
Keira Knightley stepped
like
into her body again.
My father was like, nobody cares. I feel like she's like the voice of Tumblr right there. Yes. Very, very funny.
Yeah, she is done with the Tyrells. Like, she is like, yes. I will murder you in your sleep, and Loras, no one cares. Like, shut up. Loras is just getting it so bad this year.
When Margaery went to wrap her, you know, like to hold her, like, this, we're going to hang out and everyone can see us getting along. She's like withdrawing the entire time. I loved it. I feel like I've seen that happen a few times in real life too. So well acted.
It was well done, but I almost feel like Cersei, I mean, she's a strong woman and she's a great character, but it's just moments like this when she just plays her hand too soon. Like, you can tell she doesn't have Tyrion's intelligence because she's getting annoyed. She's getting fed up, but this is not in her best interest. You know what I mean? Like, I just couldn't help but like facepalm a little bit because she doesn't have as much control as she thinks she does. And scenes like that just make that really obvious, I think.
She's used to being the queen for so long that she's lost subtlety.
Exactly. And she doesn't like, doesn't she realize that no matter what, how much of an enemy she, like if she knows that Margaery is playing the game. So by sort of putting that out there in the open between them, that is making herself vulnerable in a way, because Margaery's still going to be queen. And I was just like, I don't even know why I'm trying to stick up for Cersei, because I don't like her, but in some way I'm like, come on, Cersei. Cause she's,
I like her too. I mean, her character is flawed and she's wrong about a lot of things, but I think at the end of the day, she's fueled by the love for her family and obviously her lust for power, which I think most of the people in this show have. Mm-hmm. But at the bottom of it, she has this really strong relationship with Jaime. I mean, it could be worse.
Yeah.
We just lost Michael. Hold on.
It could be Joffrey.
I'm doting on Cersei right now. I feel terrible, but
no, I know. But I feel like we should, because she doesn't. I mean, everybody hates Cersei. Everybody hates the cave people and Cersei.
Right.
So, and I always found her such a fascinating character in the books, and I find her lack of, it's one of those great characters that George R. R. Martin creates that aren't perfect. And I mean, obviously, we know Cersei, right. She's not perfect, but she's also not perfectly, she's so perfectly flawed and she's so vulnerable in some situations, like, you know, not like Sansa, but kind of like, right. Not actually in any way similarly to Sansa, but there is that same level of depth to their characters that I really enjoy.
She could have it a lot worse in this situation, because Loras won't be interested in her anyway. I think Loras would be more than happy to, you know, like whenever, let's just say in a perfect world for her, when everything dies down, right? Loras and her hanging out, and she's like, I'm going to go hang out with Jaime. And Loras is like, cool.
I've been practicing. Can I come?
God. Oh, wow. Well, it was a good episode, though. I really loved it. And I think that recently things have been a little slow, and you know, we can't have everything every single week. It's the progression of stories, and that's how they flow. We didn't see Theon, and I think we all asked to not see that again.
Yeah,
right? Yes.
So that's good. And we did get to see Gendry. And I guess we can go ahead and talk about this Gendry scene because Micah has lagged out and he probably wouldn't say nice things about Gendry anyway. Hold on.
Oh. Okay, so Gendry.
Yeah.
It was so funny because, you know, Zach, you sent me that text. You were like, ooh, sexy Gendry time. But all I could think of during Gendry time.
I didn't say that. I said settle down.
You did. But all I could think about during that sexy shirtless Gendry scene was, holy crap, he is going to die. She is going to kill him. This is terrible. I'm so angry.
Right.
She didn't this time, but I'm still terrified. I mean, Sue, what do you think? Do you think that he's going to die this season?
No, mostly I was just thinking, man, this is bullshit that she's naked again. And as soon as they start to pull down his pants, she gets on top and we don't see anything. And I just, that made me so mad. Yeah. That's just not fair.
Oh, wow. Well, Micah's dropped what they out, do in this so show. The ladies are taking over right now on Goo.
But yeah, I mean, they could do that, but I just feel like I know they've done that with some other characters, but I think that is a little bit too risky to do that with Gendry at this point. I mean, I don't know for sure. This is me speculating at this point because this is where they have diverged. I just want to make that clear. This is speculation because it has diverged from the books at this point. My speculation is that Davos at this point will intervene.
Yes.
So I don't think that he will die, but I don't know for sure.
That's a theory that's going around, and I sort of had the same thought during the episode, but I'm like one of those people that I don't dare to be optimistic about it because I'm so sure that I'm wrong. But I mean, one great thing could be if Davos somehow managed to take Gendry away, either with Stannis' help or without his help. And I would love to see that because the thing about killing Gendry in the show, I mean, I'd get over it. The show has a million characters. It's not so much that. The reason why it would really bother me if they did it, is because clearly they would have spoken to George R. R. Martin about it. Right. And they would have been like, he would have been like, sure, kill him. I don't need him. And that would really piss me off because that would mean that he's not significant later in the story. And I really feel like he needs to be because, I mean, characters need to be significant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that would just really sort of, whenever I read the books, it would just kind of bum me out because
that's a danger. It's so dangerous what they're doing right now with the show and the book. And
would spoil the book a little bit if they killed him because we'd know.
Right.
Although not necessarily because they have said like, I mean, to us, I don't think it's a big deal, but there was that minor Dothraki guy that they killed off that George, mm-hmm. George was kind of in a tizzy about, oh, I've got him coming back in the Winds of Winter. And he, you know, and I mean, for me, it's like, well, you know, George.
Who was that?
It was the guy that they had.
The Blood Rider?
No, it was the guy that they had Drogo rip his throat out was named.
We just watched that today.
Oh,
we just
watched that episode.
Yeah. I had a feeling it was that. Yeah.
It was him. His name, Mago or Mago. He is actually like a living. He was like a living character.
Right.
So he's still alive in the books and will be back at some point and is pertinent in the Winds of Winter.
Mike is here, everybody.
Hello, Micah.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue.
That was
sorry.
Fun. This is what we call getting around internet issues using the iPhone.
We're talking about Gendry and stuff.
And whatnot.
Oh, yeah. That was a weird scene.
Did you like it?
Well, I'm sure two people on this show may have enjoyed it more than two other people on this show.
Hey, we've just talked about the ratio of nakedness, female to male, was slightly in you guys' favor.
I hate to derail the ab talk for one moment. I want to address what you were just saying really quick, Sue. If they deviate too much from book canon with the show, does that spoil the book? Maybe.
Not always.
But this could create an alternate universe for us, and we could have two different stories, and I'm down for that, because both are pretty good.
Exactly.
I still think this would ruin the show. I mean, in terms of because it's Gendry, because he's Robert's bastard.
Right.
Yeah, because it's Gendry.
Right.
Because he's Robert's bastard, because I feel like that, like, his role later down the line could be really significant. But if they kill him off, I'm not going to think that anymore.
Well, good for Joe Dempsey getting more screen time.
You think they're going to kill him off, though? That. You really believe that?
I don't believe it. I wonder.
I don't think they are now. I think this was the decider for me.
You think that they're sending him away with Dallas then?
That's an interesting theory.
You assholes.
No, I didn't even think of that, to be honest.
We need another road trip anyway, because what are we going to do? I guess we still have Jamie and Brienne.
Road trip.
All right. Back to the nudity. It happened. Yes. we got a few dishes of that this episode, but I feel like they were really going for the art in this scene with the Gendry scene. Just the fire and the blood. It was like, what is that movie? Queen of the Damned.
The leech, there's a little extreme. The leech below the belt was not cool.
Yeah.
Though. I know. Well, you could kind of after Theon last week, though, it was a little bit tame, I thought.
Yeah. It's like, don't complain too much, man.
I'm telling you, they're going for a theme. They were threatening to cut off someone's penis again, and then they had Melisandre dropping the leech on his groin again. Like, I'm telling
you. Yeah. They're doing we don't say penis on the show, so
yeah.
Thanks.
So yeah. I'm just saying, we're doing all kinds of terrible things to men this season. So I guess that's the thing. That's the theme. Right. Yeah.
Those three leeches remind me, what were the names that Stannis spoke?
Balon.
Balon, Greyjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And
Joffrey.
Rob and Joffrey, right?
Yep.
So those are the three pretenders.
Mm.
Those
You're
usurping.
You're just a pretender.
The great pretenders. They're all vying for... She forgot Mance Rayder, though, I think. She didn't have that many leeches.
Mance Rayder. I forgot Mance Rayder.
Well, you've only
screen.
Seen him once, yeah.
Is he still working on that fire? Is that what he's doing?
He's off with those goats. Yeah. You know he is.
Yeah, no. He's working with the goats of the North in order to construct mm-hmm. the largest fire the North has ever seen.
North has ever seen, and he's still building it.
It's just a really nice,
he's like they'll see.
coordinated dance effort with everybody. You'll see.
Yeah, and like the end of season 3 will just open with him like piling it on. Like, they'll all see.
It's very flammable goat fat. It just goes right through. I mean, again, this was a great episode, and I thought that we got to see... I hate the transition awkwardly, but there was nudity, and then there was more Dany nudity, which I think we haven't seen in a very long time.
Somebody was just speculating, actually, over at Wick today, that there was some gossip column note. Una Chaplin said something in an article that some actress on Game of Thrones complained about, you know, she didn't want to show her breasts anymore, and people were saying they thought that it was Emilia Clarke. I'm like, well, there she is tonight. Naked. So apparently it's not her refusing to get naked anymore. So, but everyone thought it must be her because we haven't seen her naked, you know, since like the first season. But
well, who's that? Who's shown her breasts?
It was Ross,
a lot?
And they killed her off.
That's what we were wondering.
It was Hodor. He's like, I'm done with this.
we miss Christian's prosthetic.
Yes, we got to see that today when we did the commentary.
Oh my god,
we
did. That's terrifying.
We just pressed pause and just checked it out for a while.
Oh god,
we didn't, but we should have. No, the entire scene with her and the Second Sons, I really like this because I love the fact that they're able to play so casually this Game of Thrones, I guess, mm-hmm. like the war. I've always loved that about medieval tactics where the people in charge are so casual, yet there are just thousands ready to slaughter each other in their name.
I also loved, I don't know if I loved it. I kind of felt, you know, whenever that guy, whatever his name was done being just absolutely terrible and he left the tent and Dany said, you know, when the battle starts, kill him first. Yeah. I loved it because it was badass, but I have to sort of stop and think. You can really tell like how bad of a strategist Dany is if she would kill off the leader of a troop at the beginning of a battle.
Yeah.
Like, come on, Dany, wait till the end of the battle.
You know, that's how they do it in the movies, Dany. Have you ever watched TV before?
No, she was saying if he's the opposition. Like she was saying like if he was at that point they were the opposition, not on their
right.
side. So if he was Miro is the man's name. If he's the opposition and Barristan kills him, that's when he's on the other side. So you do want
right.
Oh, I thought it was when they were fighting for... I thought she assumed they would come back and fight for her.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
so
no.
I was like, that's stupid.
Yeah, no. That's actually good strategy.
That makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah, no. Yeah. That's good strategy, killing him at that point. So, yeah. No.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense. I was just like, I mean, come on. Don't carry that much of a grudge. You'll, like, kill your own men.
Well,
okay,
he did get that booty slap in at the end, and that made everyone there mad. Everyone was just uncomfortable and mad about that.
I know. I was like, dude, that guy's a douchebag. Really glad he
but
got
then
his
there
head
was Dario with his fabulous hair.
Yeah, who I assume is a new babe magnet right now, right? Like that's his role. Her, like he's just the eye best candy. Looking guy. He's just gonna come in and slay everybody that doesn't like her. I like it. That's cool.
I have to wait and see. Yeah. I have to wait and see about him. I know he has a really good body underneath that clothing.
Oh, okay.
I have to get. I've seen photos.
Who knows?
I've seen photos on Tumblr. I know.
You're right.
But we'll have to get to know the.
You'll have to show me those blogs after we.
Yeah, what blogs?
Yeah. I posted the pictures. I'll show you.
From your private collection.
Well, Melisandre and Gendry today.
Are the the second sons, are they a bit like the Brotherhood without banners of the the East?
No, they're like they're just sellswords, right?
Yeah, these are just mercenaries.
They're entrepreneurs, guys. They put a bunch of people together and they get paid a lot of money for their strength.
Yeah, they'll just murder but you for money. That's it.
Yeah, but I think probably Dario might have a bit more of the Brotherhood mentality because he had some really, you know, fun that you can always tell when they're trying to make you like a character when they make him say like really really modern things, like, you know, I love the thing, what did he say, like God, the gods gave us two joys, bedding women who want to be bedded and killing a man who wants to kill you or something like that. It was a really great quote. I'm sorry that I totally butchered it.
Well, I mean, if you boil it down to life, I mean, I guess it's kind of like that, except in the modern world, it's like finding a girlfriend who likes the same video games you do and finding a job that pays enough for cool rent.
Exactly. No, but it's more than that, though. I think it's just a case of him saying, you know, there's no, basically he's like telling that other guy off, you know, like there's no honor in enforcing your way to stuff. Like the great things in life are those that choose you.
Like Game of Thrones. You've listened. Aww. There's so many other podcasts out there. Yes. You pick this one to listen to.
Yes. We don't force you to listen. Well, actually,
well,
I take that back.
Yeah, we kind of do. Sorry about that. No, but I forgot a scene. And I mean, I think it was probably for me, I don't want to say the best one I've seen, but my brother was watching with me tonight and I turned to him and I said, I think that was my favorite scene. But when Davos and Stannis had it was a talk. They were just having a conversation and I thought that a lot got revealed about how they both thought about things. And I'm glad that he's out of jail now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, he needs Davos at his side at all times. So.
And I like that Stannis recognized that.
Yeah, you could just tell he just needed to talk to him so bad. Like, that's his I don't know. Stannis has seemed so... Well, I was going to say he has seemed so ill at ease, but I guess he's always ill at ease. But he has seemed more so, you know, of course, since Blackwater. But when he was talking to Davos, he just seemed to feel better already just talking to him. I don't know. I was like, yeah, you need your friend, man. Get to it. I don't know.
Well, he's having a little crisis at home because this new chunk of man meat that's all young and fresh has been, you know, and like his lady, I guess, assuming that the way he feels about her, it's kind of up in the air. But, you know, she brings Gendry in and she's like, you know what I'm going to do to him? And I was like, oh, no. Oh, you're going to kill him. That's much better instead of making Stannis jealous. But no, she did what Stannis didn't want her to do, I think, deep down. And I didn't really see the proof in the fire with the leeches. I'm assuming that we're going to find out more about it.
Well, I think it was very telling. I mean, I think what he was doing is he was trying to get validation for who these other kings were really going to be. You know, if the flames shot up, at least that's what my anticipation was, by throwing these leeches in there, it would tell him that perhaps Joffrey or Balin or Rob were actually the true king, not him.
Okay.
That was my take from it. I don't know if anybody else got that. I think there's other things you could take away from it.
I thought he was just basically like, you know, naming the people that he was going to go after. You know what I mean? Like that was what he was doing.
I thought it was a curse.
I think there's more that you can take away from that scene, but we can move forward and not talk about that scene anymore. You were talking about Davos before. I liked the reading scene. I don't know if you guys talked about that at all before I was able to get back online, but that was just a really cool moment where he's sitting there and he just finally has that realization that he understands these words.
Well, enough's a hard word. I'll give him that. It's strange looking. Congrats to you, man.
Congrats to that's a big milestone. Shireen for teaching him how to read.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you're learning how to read, starting with all those Valyrian names has got to be the hardest.
Yeah.
Like, we can't even read them.
How many times I've seen Targaryen misspelled, and you got it right, buddy.
It's like, holy geez. What a way to start learning to read. Jesus.
That was funny, by the way, when Gilly or when Sam was listing off names for Gilly, and it's just, you just remember how weird these names are in Game of Thrones. Like, they're just like amalgamations of normal names.
Guyman.
Yeah,
Guyman.
And he said, what a great name.
But he said John. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
He just slipped that in there. He didn't.
Yeah.
He didn't
really,
yes. Really, and then not... he like, there was a long pause and he was like, oh, damn, she's not biting. Fine, Guyman.
Guyman, fine. She goes Craster and he was like, shit, don't call him that. It's, I mean, it's your kid, but please don't. It's
the only male name she knows. Oh.
Well, that's cute
Mormont
that she wants to name
was
kind
of cute.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Mormont Tarly. Not a bad
yeah,
name.
Yeah, no.
It's got a ring to it. Come here, Morm. Morm.
Morm.
Morm.
That's too Star Trek-y. Morm.
Yeah, he could be a
he
good
cook,
though.
He would be best friends with Mord.
Yes,
go.
He would.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. There's too many of these parallels that we're
Hodor.
Drawing. This is dangerous. Well, they were in the snowy, secretive place in the world. And, you know, of course, what better place to stop than a crying tree and
sure.
a nice little shack? I'm assuming that this is where the men of the Night's Watch would take their vows, just north of the wall, correct?
I don't know if they're that close to the wall.
They might not be. I just assume that that was like a Night's Watch shack by the Weirwood tree that they take their vows at. Just north. I mean, I might be wrong. I'm assuming there's a lot more trees out there, but
yeah,
there were a lot of the ravens.
I don't know.
Yes, there were a lot of ravens.
Those were all of Mormont's ravens, weren't they? Or Aemon's, I guess.
They could be. I thought they were wild, or maybe somebody else's ravens. I had a couple thoughts about those.
I thought we were going to see
well, everyone that I.
But
yeah,
didn't.
Yeah.
I thought so too.
I thought so too.
But
yeah,
but then
me
in retrospect, in retrospect though. I mean, it makes sense that we did it because this moment when Sam stabs the White Walker, even though it happened differently in the book, that needed to happen.
It did.
Yeah,
it did
absolutely.
Need to happen.
But he forgot to take the dragon glass with him.
Stabbing Sam.
That's true.
We'll
I noticed that.
Stabbing
yeah.
Sam.
He has more. He has more, right?
Surely.
He's got to. Yeah. So I was really impressed by the end of the episode. I really liked it for, you know, maybe the last couple of episodes. Barring the Brian Cogman one, you know, mm-hmm. I was kind of a little bit underwhelmed, but I really liked the end to this episode. And as we were talking about before, I thought either number one, we were going to get introduced to a new character, but Selena, you pointed out, wouldn't necessarily have made sense right away. Or I thought we mm-hmm. were going to get a little bit more character interaction, but that didn't happen yet either.
No.
Yeah.
I think we're on a good track with Sam and Gilly, though. Like, it's one of the many stories this season that I really am so surprised by how little screen time they've gotten. Because considering how many Theon torture scenes we've had and how many John and Ygritte conversations we've had, like, they have enough time.
Right.
But then again, they are dragging certain things out because they can't have everything happen in season 3. Considering yeah. they also have season 4 to fill. So it makes sense. But I think storylines like Sam and Gilly's are definitely heading somewhere good now.
Yeah, I think they'll run into some people
excited.
By the end of the season, hopefully.
Yeah.
Maybe season finale, yeah. Maybe.
I'm hoping. That would be a good place to...
The Reigns of Castamere. I like how they slid that in there.
Oh, that's a great story. And
yes.
Just to menace the Tyrells a little bit more, but yeah, I'm glad that they slipped in.
Oh, the Tyrells are unmenaceable, though, I think, at this point.
You know what? Marjorie looked a little frazzled, though, after she... That very direct threat. I think Marjorie is so used to people being all subtle and little court games. The fact that Cersei came right out and was like, I'm going to strangle you in your sleep if you do that again. Marjorie really looked frazzled, so I don't think she's used to
that's
that,
true.
That kind of hardball.
That is true. That's a very good point. And maybe we are not giving Cersei enough credit because, I mean, Cersei is tired of playing the games. And in some cases, you do need to break the wall, if you will, and and just sort of come outright and acknowledge stuff. The only thing I'm thinking of is last time someone did that, their name was Ned Stark and it didn't end very well for them.
Yes.
And that was with Cersei, ironically enough. So she should know better than to call people out on their bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess there's really, I mean, that kind of owes true to the real world. It's like, play your cards correctly, Cersei, no matter how mad you get. You might have had a little bit too much wine, which is why there's a drinking age, right? Something like that.
Yes.
Yep. She even tries to jump the gun on the episode name. It's like 2 weeks from now, and she's already talking about the Reigns of Castamere.
Right. Well, 2 weeks. Oh, what are we going to do next week? Let's think.
I don't know. Something fun.
We can have a Game of Owns pool party and invite all the listeners. Sue, you coming?
Sure.
Woo-hoo. She's already there. She's already on her way.
No, yeah. Bring your fun noodles, everyone. Those
bring your
nice.
Dario pictures and
yeah, no, just bring an iPad with this episode on it with everything cut out except the Gendry scene.
I'm already taking my pants off. I'll be right there.
There you go. I had a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to how Dany's story with all of this is going to close, because now, I mean, we just had a conversation recently that she had a lot of people. Like, she has a decent army of 8,000 people that are pretty strong, and she has dragons, and she has the Selm, as I like to call them. I read that in the book. It's called the Selm. I found it in a book. I read forward and I found the Selm. It's a spoiler. Whoops. But it's cool that she has more fighters now, and I think it's good for drama sake. And I think it's good for our entertainment sake, personally. At least I know for me, to see Jorah get a little bit annoyed by every hunk she brings around.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were just doing commentary on season 1, and you can just see him seething every time Drogo looks at her knowingly. Like, oh, you're my wife. He's like, I hope that wound festers and you die, sir.
Definitely. I wonder if Dany is going to close out the season again.
Maybe. I don't know.
If I were a betting man, I would bet against that.
No, because that seems to be the trend.
No, that's true. And then whatever you guys are talking about will probably happen next week or in 2 weeks.
Sam closed out the season last year.
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, just in terms of Dany having that big, because like in the whole, the structure of the seasons have kind of, Dany's episode has kind of been the final episode, both in season 1 and season 2.
Right.
That's a good point, but I think there might be other things.
Yeah, we'll
close out this season.
Yeah, I think so too. Oh my God. Yeah. It's so exciting.
Poor Zach. Well, everybody else who's like me, let's become friends with each other. Share marshmallows at this pool party. I'm not allowed in the pool. I have weak knees. And I just stick to recounting the episode. Like everybody else who is shocked and confused at a lot of things that happened. I, for one, am glad that Gendry is still alive.
The difference with this episode is that a lot of the scenes were much longer, and I don't feel like they switched between a lot of different characters. They kept it pretty consistent throughout the episode. So I feel like there's a little bit less to talk about.
I mean, there was one tiny Arya scene, and there was no Jaime and Brienne. There was no Robb and Catelyn and Talisa. There was no John. Like, there was so much that
thankfully,
just didn't happen
no
this week.
Thankfully,
there was no Theon. No, exactly. There was no Theon's sister, who we still haven't seen.
Right. Eric was actually at this wedding. That's why he couldn't make it for the commentary and for this episode. I've really personally enjoyed the flow of how they distributed this episode, though. I guess that's why... You know, in my mind, I'm thinking usually we're talking for an hour and a half before we even get to the last scene. But I mean, the way the pacing was in this episode, I loved the amount of screen time they gave every scene. And I think that the wedding situation, you know, and this is totally apart from book canon. I'm sure those things deviate from one another. But from a filmmaking standpoint, from a story pacing standpoint, I really, really enjoyed how they handled all of that, with Tyrion getting slightly drunker and with Joffrey kind of being an asshole walking down the aisle.
How awkward that whole scene was.
Yeah, his little stab at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. It was very,
when
very
he was
well.
Like, Ned's not here, so here I am instead. I'm the father of the realm.
Yeah, because you chopped off his head, you douchebag.
Right. But it was a very beautiful cloak. And I don't know. Like, I watched something like this and I remember... It's just a nice little dose. It's like you can get really excited about an episode, and as you're watching it, you're like, this is a very good show. This is why we make a podcast about it. They did a good job. So that's cool.
Yeah, it was very well made.
Speaking of cloaks, this is totally off topic and random, but I just have to ask anyone on the podcast panel and everyone who's listening, please tell me that I'm not the only one who thought in the opening scene with, or the second opening scene with Dany, Barrison, and Jorah, when they were wearing those hoods, that Barrison looked exactly like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah. Oh my god, totally.
Like, seriously, I was like, what is happening?
A little speeder with the force field under it.
I've thought that since he came back. Like, since the very first scene when he comes back.
Holy shit, and it, like, he's a Jedi.
Yeah, since
he's a Jedi. It explains everything.
Yeah, it's since the very first scene. He, like, has the hood and he comes back and he kills that, you know. So kills the Manticore. Yeah, oh, yeah.
I'm disappointed in all of the lovely people that comment on our show. A winner is coming, a hype pool across the internet, like Twitter and shit, because no one has said this.
No one has said, but it's so obvious. I expected, like, R2-D2 to, like, come up to them in that scene. Like, it was insane.
Like, because I feel like we didn't really know that they were going to Yunkai. Like, I didn't feel it coming because I haven't read it. But they were there, and they were there, and that was great. So they could have been somewhere different this week, and I don't think it would have felt
Tatooine.
That foreign. Right. So what if next, you know, in the next 2 weeks, they show up, and they're, like, at Jabba's palace, and, you know, trying to collect bounty on someone. I'm saying, obviously, this is a joke, and it's funny, but I think it's great that Barrison's a Jedi, because it goes right back to what you're going to hear on Wednesday on our commentary episode, when Selmy is, like, the Selmster, when he's, like, even now I could cut you down. Like they're pieces of cake or some shit. Because he has a lightsaber and it goes through their armor. This is perfect.
Yes.
All right, well, listen.
Cut you down.
And
like,
he's like, that's how he
cake.
Escaped, too, from King's Landing. He's like, I am not the white cloak you're looking for.
Yeah, he just moved his hand. He's not the white cloak we're looking for. Listen, if anything that we're saying right now is own-worthy, if you feel like this is necessarily something that you might consider good, if you're a fan of Star Wars and or anything that's awesome, maybe you might like it. But I have to give my own of the episode to someone that no one likes and to someone that no one's going to sit at home and write about and cheer about. But I think that it is very clear in this episode from an own standpoint, strictly an own standpoint, that when Joffrey took the stool, no one could have done anything. He's the king.
So
he literally, it's like a traditional setting. You guys have been to things like this. Now imagine you're the president and you're doing something like this, and the president just walks up and takes a stool and he's like, say something. So that's yes. My own. You win, Joffrey.
That was true. I have to say, yeah, Joffrey, absolutely. And Tywin too had a lot of control in those scenes. Not in that scene though. But I think my favorite, my own has to be a line of Tyrion's. I had a tough time choosing because they were all so amazing. But ultimately, I went with, I shall build a shrine to myself at the next brothel I visit.
Oh my God,
I hope he
so
does
good.
That.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I think mine is definitely going to be Cersei for nobody cares what your father once told you for Loras. Oh, that was harsh, but true.
That was brilliant. Yeah, nobody cares, Loras.
Yeah, no one cares.
My father once told me the moon looks beautiful on the water. No.
Nope.
No, he didn't.
No.
Yeah, and I tweeted it out earlier, but my own has to go to Tyrion when Sansa turns to him and says, what if I never want to sleep with you? And he just very casually, very sarcastically says, and so my watch begins.
Oh!
Yes, that was brilliant. I love that.
That
such
was
a brilliant
amazing.
Scene, too.
Well, you see, there's a setback when we record these episodes so close to the show airing, as we don't get a chance to go back and watch and then later pretend like we know everything that happened. So we're kind of prostrating ourselves in front of you. Not in a bad way, but in a true, pure family duty honor, sort of way. Mm-hmm. And Tyrion had about 100 different great things. And I think that Peter Dinklage, if he's listening right now, hats off to you, sir.
Hi,
or
Peter.
Pants off to you, sir. You know, depending on if Sue's hanging out with us.
There you go.
Speaking of, thank you for coming and hanging out for 2 weeks in a row. I know it's late. That's awesome, though. Thanks for coming.
You know.
I do. She's on Twitter. We can just plug her right now. She's Wick_Fury, right? No. That's not you.
Yeah, that is.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Wick_Fury? Okay.
That's me. Who did you think I was?
I must have got you confused with someone.
Somebody else?
Marco?
There we go. No, I didn't.
We just casually threw a Marco into every episode.
We do. Marco, if you're
Hello.
Listening, we miss you, sir.
I can see how you'd mix me up with that guy from Europe.
Yes. Well, that also, you're much on Tumblr nowadays, and hopefully the new Yahoo acquisition of Tumblr today for $1.1 billion won't scare you away. You like Yahoo, though, right? The yodeling guy?
Yeah, I'm not quite so scared, except for the downside is apparently Yahoo doesn't allow porn on any anything they own, which
damn it.
Is a problem.
That's gotta change.
There's a lot of butts on Tumblr and Game of Thrones, so I don't know. Mm-mm. I have a problem.
Well, if you're into that kind of thing, I'm sure you can find it.
Well, I know, but we have to be able to post our Game of Butts. You know, there's a lot of nudity on Game of Thrones, so we need to be able to post our boobs, you know, our screen caps and whatnot. Yeah, that's what, you know, strictly from a useful point of view. I'm just being practical.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a teaching thing, right?
It's strictly
educational.
Strictly educational.
Yeah, totally.
Continuity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Speaking of strictly educational, Game of Thrones does have a Twitter account, and it's riddled with lots of different things you can learn about the world, such as our recent tweet we got from Samantha and Nia at Game of Thrones. That's it. Just at Game of Thrones, which was our last tweet. I just had
short
to read that. We retweeted it. So yeah, there you go. Lots of good things to find on our Twitter account if you guys so wish to follow us.
Well, just put like some lemon juice on your screen. Maybe it'll reveal like secret messages.
Yeah. And please take photos of you doing that and send it to us at contact@gameofthrones. That's our email address. So a lot of you guys write in. We actually do read all of the emails and try to get a chance to reach all of those. And I assume that this Friday we'll probably have another mailbag episode and a lot more of those we'll get caught up with. So send them over.
And now introducing Micah Tannenbaum, reads the tweets in however many seconds or less.
All right.
Yar.
Here they are, the owns of the episode. Andy writes in and says, Samwell Tarly owned blue-eyed white grandpa.
He did.
Poor guy. He was just like, I haven't held a child for the past 20 years.
It's been so long. Everyone's afraid of me.
Michael Cerrone writes in, Danny owned the second sons with, a fortnight ago, I had no army. A year ago, I had no dragons. You have 2 days to decide.
I think Jay-Z made a song about that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Kristen Krantz says Tyrion owns Sansa's rejection of him.
Kristen!
With, quote, and so my watch begins. So we agree on that, Kristen. Nice job there.
Nice job.
Michael Cerrone also gave us another own, says Cersei totally owned Margaery with, you ever call me sister again, I'll have you strangled in your sleep.
I've had to tell Eric that like 20 times.
Diana tweets in with two owns. She says Missandei owned Daenerys and her mispronounced Dothraki in such a polite and classy manner that at the same time she also owned everyone else who's tried to own Daenerys and failed.
Wow.
And of course we could not conclude this episode without what could have been the own we all missed when Tyrion says, this is from Michelle Muchisi, then you'll be fucking your own bride with a wooden cock. Wins in my book.
Yes.
Suck it, Joffrey.
Yes. Yeah, I retract my previous own. That was, in fact, the own.
Those are the owns that we've selected for this episode, but we'll be sure to include more on Friday's episode when Eric shall return. And he will read the tweets in who the hell knows how fast. Probably like 10 minutes.
And you can, of course, visit hyperbole.com, which is hyperbole.com, where we bring you all kinds of news, not just Game of Thrones, but also lots of other shows. I know most stuff is on hiatus right now, but with Game of Thrones off for a week, maybe there's something will catch your interest. You can catch up on your Once Upon a Time genealogy to compare to the complicated Tyrell stuff.
It's true. And if you missed seeing Hodor this week on the show, I do a podcast with them. Yes, I do. It's really funny. No, it's just, I don't really know how to describe it. It's a show we make together, and I'm really terrible about doing plugs, but it's called To His Company. And we talked about it before. We are on our third episode. By the time you're listening to this, we have made the fourth one. And it's a fun adventure, and it's going to be even more fun. And we're really excited about it. So if you guys are into listening to more podcasts, if Game of Thrones 3 times a week for you is not enough, maybe you could head over to twoiz.co. That is the web address, and everything that you'll ever need to find is there. So get clicking and let me know what you think. It's fun.
And of course, you can rate and review them on iTunes, just like you can rate and review Game of Thrones on iTunes. So head on over there and make sure you give us 5 stars. It is still the month of May. Nothing less is acceptable.
Or we may threaten you. Well, you like that pun? You like that pun?
Threats are coming.
The threat is, if you don't, I may have to do another pun like this again.
Yeah, you know, I was looking through my notes here, and there is something that Stannis said. I don't really know if you consider it an own, and I don't know how this will tie to closing out the episode, but I'm sure we'll
close it with your own.
He says, what's one bastard boy against a kingdom? And I said, I wonder why that was written in there.
Mm. Uh-huh.
What did you think about?
The dude with the curly hair that's dating the red-haired chick.
You may never know. And if we do find out, we will tell you on Game of Owns, a podcast that you're listening to right now. I'm Zach.
I'm Selena.
I'm Micah.
We know you're the Fury, but you can tell us if you want. Signing off with kind regards.
So seriously, Micah, who are you talking about?
You know nothing, Selena.
Oh! It's very early.